Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text next step to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 Hope line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
So what do you think?
It's showtime.
Welcome back to another episode of Winning Time. I'm just kidding. Another episode of Showtime. I'm your host, Jason Katie Madison.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
That's
we froze.
Great start.
We froze.
There we go.
He's back.
Birdman hand rub. It's Jason Madison, joined as always by my co-hosts, Bethany Anderson and Anthony Mays. What up, y'all? How y'all feeling?
Yo.
Feeling good. How about you?
I'm good.
How you doing? We never ask. We never throw the question back. How are you doing, Jason?
You know, I'm good. Been working, watching some TV. I was shopping at the Carhartt store, feeling good about my new crew neck.
All right.
And my birthday's coming up in a month, May 26th, a month from now. So
hey.
Excited.
One day after my birthday, yes.
Wait, what?
Yeah, May 25th.
How did we not ever discuss that?
I didn't know that.
Bethany and the Geminis chopping it up. Showtime.
Wow. And we're the good Geminis. We're the May Geminis. So that's the best kind.
I didn't know that was the thing.
Yeah.
Found out. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, Kanye and Donald Trump are both June Geminis. We've got Andre 3000 and Lauryn Hill.
When's Kendrick's birthday?
He's June too. He's June too. He's a good one.
So is he he's a bad one or what?
No,
according
he's a good
to Jason's
one.
Rubric that he just drew up, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally arbitrary line of the sand that we've drawn amongst the Geminis.
I'm just kidding.
On our side though.
Well, yeah, exactly. We're adopting Kendrick. Nah, I'm just playing. A lot of people are super into horoscopes and shit like that, and everybody's like, March Aries and April, all that stuff. Anyway, so that's very random fact. Me and Maze are one day apart. Maze, what did you think of this week's Atlanta episode?
Oh, God.
White fashion.
Thankfully, this is a safe space. Since B dropped the season-long thesis of this is the crucifixion of the white ally, it has really opened my eyes to every single episode experience, and this one was the most ridiculous yet.
Yeah.
Because we are taken fully inside the system, and now it's not just white allies, it's white corporate allies, specifically in the fashion industry. And I mean, Paperboy, Brian Tyree Henry, virtuoso performance in this episode.
Yes, Yes.
Like mind-blowing
shit. He's
killing it.
Yeah.
And Darius's plotline ripped my heart out.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I just want to say, like, I have to publicly apologize to Donald Glover because.
Wow, we did it. We did it, folks.
He gave me two back-to-back episodes that were really good, and this one answered all of the questions that I had posed to him previously. Maybe not all of them in terms of like the black woman aspect, but he had a new, interesting, needed, necessary take on race and race politics, and showed what's going on behind the curtain in the most clever and creative way. And I was so happy that he picked this topic, and the way that he did it, I thought was perfect.
Like watching this, the opening scene, oh my gosh, it just, all I could do was shake my head. The part where, you know, he's explaining the whole Central Park thing, and he was like, you know, we're going to put the 5 on there for our 5-year anniversary. And you look around this room, there's no one in there to be like, hold on, that's not a good idea. And it's like this in so many rooms, corporate America and fashion, like everywhere. There's so many people who are just moving without anyone saying, hey, let's take another look at that. Let's kind of edit this and try to do something different.
Yeah. This like, actually happened to me. So that's the craziest thing about this.
Okay, let's hear it.
So during the pandemic, I was working for Panavision, but I was working for a subdivision of them called Light Iron. And we were working remotely, and the George Floyd murder happened. There were protests in Los Angeles and in Hollywood where the offices are, and the building was boarded up. And so there was a whole, like, I don't know, like a all hands on deck meeting, and, you know, over Zoom, it's like 60, 80 people, however many people, you know, in the company, all in this call with the CEO of my company and Panavision and all these people. And we have a whole hour and a half conversation about things going on in the facility, the pandemic, all this, all that. And they did not mention the George Floyd murder or why the building was boarded up. Like, they totally ignored the whole thing. And I was like, oh, this is crazy. Like, they were about to get off the call, and I like spoke up and said something. And then they were like, I said, you guys don't want to talk about the elephant in the room? And they were like, no, what do you mean? And I said the reason why the building is boarded up. And then I said that for a couple minutes and talked about what was going on. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, oh yeah. And just kind of like pacified the conversation, got off the call. Bunch of people hit me up on Slack afterwards, like, thank you for saying something. You know, and so I was furious, and like I end up hitting up the CEO of my company, and then he ended up telling me, okay, yeah, you know, this is a good conversation, you should talk to the CEO of Panavision about this. And so basically, long story short, I end up talking to the CEO of Panavision, and they end up donating like $100,000 to this like black women's like film like organization, you know, because they felt basically so bad about what they did and how they were handling the situation. And I was just calling them out, like y'all don't see like how fucked up this whole thing is, like, you know, and just telling them about the inequalities in the industry, and like, y'all didn't send nothing out, like, everybody's dealing with this right now, y'all didn't say nothing, like, y'all don't think this is crazy? And so yeah, that was their response, like, oh yeah. And it was all of the same thing too, like, because I was, you know, I was edging for everything. I'm like, y'all should have a black person in the room when y'all, like, dealing with all of these information, you know? And they were like, oh, yeah, that's good, you know? And I was like, yeah, whether that's me or somebody else, you know? And this was all of the same stuff that happened in this episode. It was just so crazy. Like, I went through this exact scenario, you know? And they were just like, same thing. Like, we can't give... You know, like we can't pay you money, or we can't pay so-and-so money, but we could give a donation, or we could do this. Cause I was like, y'all should donate cameras to inner city school, and y'all should do this. Like, you know, I'm like, y'all should do all kind of things, set up a program, a film program. Like, y'all should be like really changing, you know, what y'all do on a base level, how it deals with the black community. And this is a perfect opportunity. And they were just like, oh, we're dealing with the pandemic, but we'll try to do what we can. You know, all these people are furloughed, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. So me watching this episode was like reliving that, you know, but obviously on steroids. And then he entered the whole like fashion, because we had the Gucci thing last year,
right,
or whatever as well. So it was like a perfect mix. And then we got Darius with the food, which was an excellent storyline for him, because I feel like he was a real person, you know, for the first time. Yeah. Like, we really got into the soul of who he was. And I love how they put that storyline in there.
You know, we had the whole Gucci situation. And then before that, we had the H&M situation where they had the, you know, black kid in the hoodie that said coolest monkey in the jungle. And it's like, how do we just get to the point where this is published and printed and out there in stores, and no one said anything? Like, how does it get that far without being checked? Yeah, this episode just, it was so triggering, because it just reminded you, like, yeah, this shit really happened.
Yeah, the reparations one, we talked about how it kind of had like a horror vibe to it.
Right.
This was so much scarier because it's fucking real, dude.
Yeah.
Everything that they did in this episode happened, has happened, will happen again.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Darius one, let's do that one first, because we can knock that out, right? Some lady who works for the fashion house is going to get him lunch, and he wants Jaffa rice, and she has no clue what the fuck that is. So she comes to ask him.
Jollof rice. Yeah.
There you go. I don't know what it is either.
See?
I'm snitching on myself here. And so he takes her to a Nigerian spot across town, and she seems genuinely interested in it, and she's going to talk to the owner, and she wants to get a business card, and she's trying to Shazam the song that's on. And is your Shazam working? Because mine's not. And then a couple weeks later, I mean, you know, it's a time lapse of some amount. We don't totally know. But Darius goes back to get the rice that he wants so badly. It's a little taste of home. They're closed. And out front, we've got a food truck.
Naja Bowl, baby.
Naja Bowl, baby.
It broke my heart.
She named a bowl after him.
The Darius.
Complete with the peaches from Georgia, you know.
That's right.
And
I got
yes,
my peaches down
I live
in
San Francisco.
That
has been happening constantly for the last 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
And it just, oh man, gentrification, folks. There it is.
That's gentrification in a nutshell right there.
Yeah.
And I forgot one detail. She didn't even talk to the owner of the restaurant. She went straight to the landlord. They were trying to sell. Bing, bang, boom. Never talked to her. She's gone. No problems. Stole her thing. Move on.
That woman was so sweet to them. And she just undercut her. Just took the building.
Right.
That's just so wild. Like, that part. First of all, I love the whole vibe of the restaurant. Like, it just felt like home. I'm sure people who are looking for that type of food, you know, that type of cultural reconnection, they go there, they have the music, they have the authentic food, they have the authentic experience. And what I really liked was seeing the woman with the baby on her lap, and she's feeding the baby soup, and you can just see the thickness of the okra. And so when the lady, she's like, you know, so what is she having? And Darius looks over, is like, oh, it's okra soup. Like, I knew that just by the texture of the soup. Like, you know, and this woman is just so oblivious to everything happening around her. And the only thing she can think about is like how to, you know, make this place more popular. She's like, how have I never heard of this? It's like,
because
it's not for you, babes. It's not for you.
But that's the thing, is that, you know, part of the whole, I don't even know how to explain it, colonization factor between white people and black people, especially like in the African and British or European balance. There's this idea of like, you know, we're going to take your curry, we're going to take your slang. Like, you know, they steal it in a different way than the white American would, you know, like, the white American is much more violent in its display and portrayal of the black culture. You know, like, when they take something, it usually looks a lot more egregious or gross. But the way that these, Europeans do it. Their finesse game is just on point. And it's just like, she just slid right in there and like.
It's like they don't care. They yeah. don't care how they look. They're just going to take it and then be like, hey, and I named it after you. How about that? Like, yeah. wait a minute. Just adding insult to injury.
It's like they fetishize the culture.
Yeah. But can I know, can I point something out about this whole episode?
I hope you do.
Where were socks?
Right. I was wondering what happened to my nigga socks. They got him up out of here.
Socks at. Yeah. I really hope so. I yeah. really
Maybe
hope that
he's getting
is nowhere
plugs
to be found.
Put in to fix that hairline. You know what I'm saying? That has him out of commission for a couple of days.
Yeah. Because when I saw the title of the episode being White Fashion, before I pressed play, I thought that he was going to have something to do with, like, you know, maybe they were praising the way that he dresses or whatever and, like, right. put him on some sort of pedestal. But when I saw the direction they were going, I'm like, oh, okay. I completely forgot about socks until, like, 5 minutes ago.
Right. Yeah, they put themselves in a weird little pickle here by kind of loosely defining the time. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Especially with just the van. Like, Van was gone. And yeah. then when Ern sees her, he's like, you've been gone a couple weeks.
Wasn't it like so 6 weeks or something?
We know that it's been weeks now, yeah. you know? And then, like, however long this woman took to completely steal the Nigerian restaurant's business, like, that's also a timeline. So, they're, you know, right. they kind right. of do better when they exist in a capsule episode like The Party where yeah. there's yeah. no context. When you start to have a little bit of context for Atlanta, you start asking questions like, where the fuck is Socks?
Yeah, they're fast and loose with the timelines in the show.
Fast and loose.
Yeah. But they're just
not
trying
a priority
to
priority for them, man.
No, they're just trying to get their point across, and I respect it.
Yeah.
But speaking of stealing, Van does show up.
Yeah.
On her Winona Ryder bullshit.
Right.
Now, has she just been going around Europe just gaffling shit? Just commandeering whatever she likes?
Well, we saw how reckless she was acting at the party, right? So just like just extrapolate yeah. that out, right? Like
Right.
Just doing whatever she wants, waiting for somebody to to grab her aggressively in a hotel lobby.
Which that right. lady was still out of line, like
way
that's
out
a whole
of line. Way
the
way
fuck out of line.
Line.
Like, bitch, get your fucking yeah, get your fucking hands off me. I feel like that Jamie Foxx and Denzel meme. Like, hands off me. Unhanded.
Yeah.
But I love how it was. Go ahead.
He came to her defense in that situation. Yeah. And they finessed a presidential suite out of it. That was really cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, even though he came to her defense, he was, you know, still had questions like, hey, girl, did you steal that wig or not? And she kind of, you know, avoided the question
yeah,
and kissed him. And
used sex as a distraction, you know.
Exactly.
What these leftover women are always doing.
Shout out to Kevin Samuel.
Oh, man. Is Van a leftover woman?
What would you rate Van?
Van is probably like a cool 7, 6.5, 7. She's a strong 7.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Zazie Beetz is a higher number, but Van.
But Van
I don't know too much about Van other than she's got kind of a reckless wild side.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, she's obviously a thief. She doesn't respond to texts.
She's obviously a thief. She sends passive-aggressive thumbs up.
Yeah, anybody that sends that thumbs up, that's a point off already, so.
Jason is not feeling that.
No, and neither was Ern. Ern might be known. That thumb is not where it's at.
Yo, so can we talk about the activists?
Yes.
Before we get to them real quick, because that is the meat of this, I do want to ask, like, what's up with Van and Ern? Was that purely a distraction hookup? Was that just like, we got the hotel room and this weird shit happened? Or, like, you know, is there more to it than that?
I can't tell. Like, at the end, you know, when he wakes up and she's not there, he's clearly disappointed.
Right.
So maybe he feels some kind of way still about her, but she's probably like, oh, let me get some dick and I'm out.
Right. It seemed like to her, or the way she moves, and this is also part of why she's a seven, is that she she's just doing shit. You know what I'm saying? There's no rhyme or reason. Like, it seems she's like purely trying to stimulate herself, and that's it. There's it's no like, oh,
she just wants to feel something.
Yeah, I'm just going through this time in my life. I want to feel something. I want to go somewhere. I want to eat something. I want to look at this. I want to do that. And I'm not really caring about the bigger picture or what all this shit means. I'm just trying to do whatever fuck I want to do. So,
but you know what? I'm going to say this, like, as a black woman and a mom, like, we don't get the opportunity to live like that. We never get the opportunity to just go out and do whatever the fuck we want.
Right.
I remember, you know, when I was, you know, still with my son's dad, and he was traveling, you know, playing ball overseas. He's going to beautiful places like the Philippines, and he's out here living life, and I'm home with my toddler. I'm stuck in the house. I can't do shit, really. Like, I can go to the park. You know, I can probably fly, you know, to North Carolina and see my family, but I'm not able to go out and just experience because I'm expected to be here and just raise my child. I don't really get to get out here and live life like men get to. And so it's actually pretty cool to see Van out here doing whatever the fuck she wants. And like when he's like, you know, even your mom doesn't even know where you are. And it's like, yeah, can you imagine that?
Yep.
Exactly.
Right. Back on him.
Yeah.
Also, you mentioned her, so we got to shout her out. The real MVP of this family right now is Grandma. Watching the kid.
Oh yeah,
watching
she's
that
holding
baby.
It down.
That's right.
Yeah, she's the real mom. While neither one of them are taking care of their child. They don't even FaceTime the kid or nothing. Like, just out here in the streets, in these European streets, getting it in. And
but
it
men
seems
definitely
like
we have that luxury to do that. Women, when we take time for ourselves, it's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Right, and I guess I have to congratulate her for that. And you know, like,
she's taking full advantage of it.
Right. Shouts out to her for flipping
being
the script
a strong
on niggas.
Seven.
Yeah. It's a strong seven. It's not the whack seven. She's could still get it. Like.
But yes, let's get to the the board meeting. This I really love the performance from Fiseo Akinade as Khalil. I thought he was awesome, and he starts one way, and by the end of the episode you realize that he's not bullshitting, and like he just has done enough of these to know how it works. But I gotta defer to the two of you. DeMarco, what do we make of this dude DeMarco?
Was that the daddy Yankee looking guy?
Yeah. That was the guy that Paperboy did not like.
Yeah.
Yo, I guess he's just kind of like the Sean King, because Paperboy continued to question, like, are you black? And he never said yes or no. He never gave an answer. But he's just out here saying nigga this, nigga that. And Paperboy is just like, does he say nigga a lot? Like, it just doesn't sound right when he says it.
It doesn't sound right.
That's it. And I want to say this. Okay, so my son's dad is African. And so I visited his country, was there for like a month and a half. Beautiful, love the people. But it always rubbed me the wrong way when they use nigga. I feel like it's an American black
it's
thing.
It's a black American. We pay the price to be able to use nigga exclusively.
Exactly.
It is exclusively ours. Everybody should understand that.
And it's East African at that. So you guys are on the other end of the continent. Like, okay, I could see some West Africans using it. I can see that.
Right.
But the East African, I was just so, like, confused by, like, whenever I hear African people say nigga, it just really throws me off. I'm sorry.
It sounds wrong.
Sorry, but not sorry. It doesn't sound right.
Yeah. No, for sure. I don't think he should have been saying nigga in the episode. But they made a good point. And then it was funny how they had, like, the black assistant. And she's like, oh, yeah, I got a $60,000 discretionary fund.
Like, and everyone was like, well, as soon as she started talking money, it's like,
give me money, please.
Okay, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's trying to filter that.
So did you notice that Khalil was wearing a safety vest with
that
every
said,
episode?
Oh, that said BLM on it, right?
It said BLM, yep.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's kind of like a shot at...
At D-Ray?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I peeped that. I was like, damn, taking shots at my nigga. I guess he didn't fuck with him. But
there's some people who don't.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know the particulars of his activism. And, you know, like, I know pretty much all these people have been called into question at some point, though, right? Like, these activists, these online social media activists. It's tough because it's like, yeah, like, where did this come from? What is this rooted in? Like, what's really behind all this? Y'all ain't doing no Black Panther shit. You know what I'm saying? Y'all ain't starting no fucking schools.
Yo.
Like, they are doing some Black Panther shit because they're going to the Black Panther 2.
right.
And this is like the second time they've referenced Black Panther.
Who
in this
did they
season?
Say was in Black Panther 2? I didn't write it down.
Lorenz Tate and Whoopi Goldberg.
Lorenz Tate.
Remember,
not
Jason
Tate
said
in this one.
Lorenz is Black famous.
Yeah, Lorenz Tate
did
is Black.
Did you say
famous.
That?
Yeah, I did. Yes, he's one of those Black famous.
Oh, man.
Oh my gosh. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I've heard the saying that where there's pain, there's profit.
Right.
And, you know, Khalil said, hey, I haven't paid for a meal in 73 police shootings. Oof.
That's cold.
Like,
He also greeted Paperboy with first time apologizing for white people. It's like, oh, let me show you how to do this. And then, of course, Paperboy, like, the first question he gets asked is racism over?
This is crazy. This is crazy. What was that panel?
Oh, my God. I don't know, dude.
He's like, we're going to turn it over to our experts. Experts in black.
It looked like they was in some sort of weird 18th century courthouse. Like, what the fuck was that?
Like, it's Europe for you, huh?
That shit was a weird-ass spot for them to be having a little press conference in. But I also loved at the beginning of the episode, like, that was one of my favorite scenes when they're just asking for shit, and then they're just like, yeah, you could have, like, no money, but you could have whatever. And he's like, yeah, let me get 3 suits. Let me get this. Let me get that. Like, you know? Like,
yeah, and then it was a brilliantly written episode. I can't say enough about that. So we've got Paperboy asking for all the shit. Then we got Earn saying to him, like, yo, what the fuck are you doing? Like, we should be investing in black businesses. We should be, you know, reinvesting in the community, all that. And Paperboy at first is like, well, you know, I'm just thinking ahead in terms of, like, having a hookup in the fashion world and, you know, getting stuff for free. And then Earn tells him, you know, you should learn the business so that then you can do it on your own. And then Paperboy essentially steals all of Earn's ideas later in the meeting, which is classic, right? When you have somebody tell you something, you're like, that's a terrible idea. And then an hour later, you're regurgitating it as your own. Mm-hmm. And then he gets himself kind of screwed by doing that too, because he records the thing for the commercial, and then they just take it and make the commercial. And then, you know, I'm sure based on what you guys just said, you weren't a big fan of the guy that closed out the commercial as the only black person in the commercial.
Oh, man. What was
stacks.
Yeah. What was this? What was the saying that they were using?
Reinvest in your hood. Reinvest in your hood.
But what were they saying, like, throughout
everyone's
the commercial?
From a hood.
Everybody's from a hood. Yeah. Yeah.
We all have our hood, right? And and then he comes in so angry, and Khalil has to tell him, like, yo, you're never going to be able to beat this. Like, all you can do is carve out your own little slice, get them to give you the money, then you can do whatever you want with that money. And so he learned his lesson after all that. But
He says, why would a company make a project that would teach black people to stop buying their product and reinvest in their own? Why would they fund their own demise? That's not a business. That's a charity. Oh.
Yeah.
It's like,
devastating.
Whoop, there
devastating
we go.
Devastating line from Khalil.
When he found out that they gave the money to the Red Cross, I was dying.
Red Cross?
That's the worst one.
That was my favorite part of the episode.
It's like Red Cross. I know everyone was like, oh no. Why would you do that?
So it was,
but
it
you
was,
know, hey, We got to revisit this episode in 2 years because apparently in 2 years, racism will be over, according to Khalil.
Yep. And then we'll know how the beginning and the end started was this episode of television.
And I just want to point out before we end it, like, they always end the episode in a way that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, yes, she left. I get it. But, like, what the fuck? Like, how is that an ending to the episode? Like, what did that
mean? What do you mean?
There was no cliff. She left. He picks up the phone and puts it down. I'm like, was that supposed to mean something? Like, I was just confused.
I mean,
exactly.
They ended the first episode with him waking up, right? So, like, I think that's kind of a thing that they're doing. But the cliffhanger is that she left. I mean, that's what it is.
And we still don't know what she's up to. Like, we have no answers about Van. We have to keep watching. Hopefully,
well, I'm telling you, the Van episode is coming.
It has to be.
Stay tuned.
And another thing before we go to the showtime or winning time, you know.
Whatever it is.
So this whole thing about the letter E is bugging me because we have Earn and we also have the creepy white monster guy who starts the whole season off on the boat. His name is E. And then we have the logos of this brand called Esco, I think it was, with the E's kind of intertwined. But it seems like Earn is dreaming of this guy. Like, this man is popping up in this dream world. I'm still trying to figure out what E has to do with this whole season. It's really starting to, like, annoy me at this point. The E's are driving me nuts.
The E's? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with the E's.
If you look at the brand,
that. Maybe it's some sort of Illuminati symbol that we don't know about.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
So B in the pilot episode, he's credited as white. And in the reparations episode, he's credited as E. So I guess, you know, we'll have to, that's another stay tuned when he comes back again, which he will.
Oh.
We know he'll be back. We know this because he's not done. So we'll have to see.
We got white E and we got black E.
Name is.
Okay. Shout out to my nigga. Not white E. My nigga Earn.
My lovely mother came to visit me and my son for a few weeks. And I thought I knew my mom better than anyone. One day, we were chatting, and I heard a story I'd never heard before. That got me wondering, how many other stories don't I know? That's why I got my mom's StoryWorth. StoryWorth is an online service that helps you and your loved ones connect through sharing stories and memories, and preserves them for years to come. Every week, StoryWorth emails your mom a thought-provoking question of your choice from a vast pool of possible options. Each unique prompt asks questions you've never thought of, like, what's some of the best advice your mother gave you? Or, if you were to do it all over, what would you do differently? Or my favorite, what have you changed your mind about over the years? I've really enjoyed reading my mom's answer to those questions. I've discovered stories and memories I've never heard about, and I've learned new things about stories I thought I really knew. Like, I found out that my mom put me up for adoption. I mean, she got me back, but she put me up for adoption. Anyway, after 1 year, StoryWorth compiles all of those questions and stories, including photos, into a beautiful keepsake book the whole family can share for generations. You know, if I have a daughter, I'm going to pass it down to her. I mean, I can give it to my son as well. He loves his Mimi. Give all the moms in your life a meaningful gift you'll both cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, for a limited time, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/bomb. That's StoryWorth.com/BOMM to save $10 on your first purchase. StoryWorth.com/bomb.
Hello, listener.
I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodle's just like, ah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with the plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
When in time, California dreaming.
Ow, that's right.
They came with another heater. It's interesting, though, I will say about the two different shows is that, like, I don't know if what this means in particular, but it's something I just noticed about myself with it. I remember Atlanta without having to take any notes. I have to take notes for Winning Time. And I don't know
is
if that means
it's longer or...
I don't know if that's what I'm trying to think. Like, is it because it's longer? Is it because it's more in-depth, entertaining? Like, do I like it more, or is it just like harder for me to remember? I don't know, but it was just something that I found interesting because I'm like, yeah, whenever I talk about Atlanta, I kind of remember everything that happened.
I mean, that is interesting. I watched Atlanta on Friday, so it's definitely a little fuzzier for me until we start getting into it, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this now, I remember that. But Winning Time, I mean, it's interesting. I think it's because they've really kind of settled into a rhythm, right? So it's like each Atlanta episode is very different.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't
I think
know
okay,
what's
I think
happening.
That yeah, I think that might be a part
it's
of
like,
it.
Like is this the episode where
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Paul yeah, did this or is this episode where Magic and Cookie said that? It's kind of more of a flow.
Right.
For sure. I think you're 100% right about that. So, yeah, so this episode, we got a lot of Magic and Cookie and Paul and Pat and Jack.
They invented the triangle offense in this episode because we got the three coaches duking it out, you know? I know the Tech winner is a little bit later in this winning time series, but lots of triangles going on here.
Yeah.
That's the theme.
Triangles.
Triangles everywhere from Cookie, Magic, and Rhonda.
Scotty. I love when Bernie Mac did that in Kings of Comedy. Phil Jackson.
Phil Jackson.
Oh, man. Is Phil going to make an appearance on this show?
I mean, if they have their way, you know.
I was actually talking to somebody about the show the other day, and they were saying they heard that season two is going to be Kobe and Shaq.
That's too much.
No,
they can't jump that far.
That's what they said, and I was like, "What? That seems crazy."
They'd have to they'd have to literally get rid of all their actors except for John C. Reilly. You know?
Exactly. So, and I was like, "What?" Happening. But do you think that the show will ever get to that? Will it jump around like that?
I don't think it'll jump, but I'm saying like they got the Magic 80s run to do, right?
Yeah.
They got five chips. They got the weird cold open flash forward that apparently we have to get to at some point. So I would say that's a good 3 to 4 seasons right there.
Pat Riley. Yeah. I think
it could get real interesting. And if the show is working, I think you could, you know, I think you could do Kobe and Shaq. It would be, I mean, I like, we just saw them do Magic and Kareem. So I'm not going to say it's impossible.
Yeah.
But casting someone as Shaq?
right. that's going to be a tough.
That's a little harder somehow. Yeah. Just because, like.
Could Shaq play himself? Could he? I mean.
If one man could do it.
Yeah. If one man would want to do it, it would probably be him as well.
It would probably be him. That might be the only way out. I see you there. But that's some, like, because of, like, it's kind of combining the two, right? Because the way they got away with Kareem is they made him pretty reserved for the most part. So it's a big dude, but he doesn't have to do too much. Whereas this would be like combining Kareem and Magic into one character where you need someone who's crazy charismatic, but also enormous. And I don't know if you could necessarily make that happen.
Shaq's one of a kind.
All the platform boots in the world wouldn't help, you know?
Yeah.
At all. Nah.
But we had a really interesting episode. I really loved the end, and I hate to just jump to the end. But, I thought the Dr. J stuff was cool, but all the scenes in the locker room this episode when they're in Philly, before and after the game, with Pat and Paul, all Pat and Paul scenes were really great in this episode. And it's got me thinking about the Shakespeare thing as well. This seems to be a very Shakespearean story as it's panning out, you know?
I wouldn't know.
Gotta interject with my Landsberger line of the week. Is Shakespeare still alive?
Yes.
Yes. Still alive? Yes.
Talking I wrote to the that other one white down. Guy? Yeah, Landsberger, baby.
Yeah.
The Landsberger.
Landsberger got his
but
line.
But I mean, Jason, you're right. I think they've definitely geared it that way. They've leaned into the Paul is a Shakespeare professor angle.
Yeah.
But also, to be fair, the brilliance of Shakespeare is that it still applies to just about everything now. So it's one of the most easy to interpret of the old works, even though we'll have to take our word for it on this one.
Yep.
Yeah, well, you got
to
watch.
Or not to be.
Or not to be. B, you should check out Denzel as Macbeth.
You know what? I did say that I was going to check it out because that's what he was nominated for Best Actor, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But this has shades of Macbeth and Julius Caesar. Basically, they're stories about kings. Hamlet is as well, and Othello. But, you know, these are stories about people being stabbed in the back and usurping the throne and, you know, all of this intrigue between, you know, politicians, governors, senators, and what happens with men with power trying to achieve, you know, very specific goals. Usually it's a war or something afoot. this is very much that, you know, like, and it's interesting how hard they're pushing that now, particularly in this episode. I really liked, I love Adrian Brody as Pat Riley. I think he just like keeps getting better. And this was probably better than the last episode. Jerry's scene with Magic at the end was great. So it's like, I might want to do this episode in reverse. But when he was like shyly saying like, I want to win. And then he like perks up and he looks him in the eye, you know, like, mm-hmm. again, because I'm from LA and you know what it means to win here and how difficult it is to be the person who's at the top of this particular entertainment pyramid of insanity, bullshit, wealth, you know what I'm saying? You have all of these things pulling at you in every direction to be the person who's at the top of that heap. I mean, you've got to be a supernova, you know, and to yeah. show how Magic achieved that. And basically, you know, through the lens of Dr. J of like, yeah, this guy, you know, he's just whining and dining you to soften you up. And then mm-hmm. Jerry West coming in and saying basically like, yeah, you're a smiley motherfucker. You don't want to win. You like all the rest of these, you know, niggas who love to smile and hang out. Are you really trying to win? And Magic is like, I'm different. You know, I'm here to win. And yeah, I just really felt the spirit of that scene. And then going back and the leading up to that, yeah, I thought it was dope. And the guy who played Dr. J was pretty solid. I liked him.
Yeah, Jordan's Sutherland. He's an 11-time international dunk champion. So,
wait, what? No, that's not.
Yeah, I ran into that same issue, B. The guy's name is, I think it's Jules.
So it's not him? Right
now. No, it's actually.
James LeSure is the guy.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And he has a very recognizable face. I'm sure the guy that you're talking about is the dunk champion, did all the dunking.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
So maybe he was like a stand-in or something? Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But, yeah, James LeSure, who is most famous for being on the TV shows Men at Work on TBS and Las Vegas, which is on from 2003 to 2008. So, you know, longtime TV veteran. Another example of a guy who is 50 years old playing a current NBA player, just like we got Wood Harris playing right. Spencer Haywood. But, yeah, I thought he was good. I thought he was charismatic. I like the characterization of Dr. J. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I've actually met Dr. J before. He's
dope.
A cool-ass person. So I was working in a nightclub here in Vegas. It's like 2010. And this is back when, like, there were no camera phones and people are not, like, videotaping the whole club experience. People are actually out having a good time in the nightclubs. And I look down and I just see this perfect head of silver hair. And I was like, that has to be Dr. J. Like, it has to be him. And so he stood up and he kind of like turned around to kind of check the whole club out. And I was just like starstruck. Not many people make me like pause and be like, oh shit. But seeing Dr. J, I was like, this is the coolest motherfucker I've ever seen. He's right. just so smooth and suave and just perfect hair. He looked healthy and just great.
Yeah.
Damn.
Dr. J has to be one of the coolest people ever. Who would you guys say are on that list? Like Snoop Dogg is on that list, I would think.
Coolest people?
Yeah, Snoop Dogg is on there. I mean,
yeah.
Jack Nicholson, but not in this show.
But Jack Nicholson has a certain level of like rage to him. Like he's
kind
cool.
of an asshole, but he's yeah, very yeah. cool though.
No, he is very cool. He like would Hef be on there, or are we revisionist?
I think we missed Hef's prime. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe yeah. in a different era, but I mean coolest.
Who's the coolest?
I think Rick Ross is cool.
Rick Ross is pretty cool. He's a yeah. cool guy.
I mean Barack he's Obama.
Cool Barack Obama's definitely
super cool.
Cool.
I think he's
Jay-Z.
Cool.
Jay-Z is one of the coolest people, right?
I don't know about that.
Okay, okay.
I don't know if he's up. I don't know if he's up on the level that we're describing. That's all.
No, you're right.
Obviously, he's a cool man. I'm not trying to take or disparage yeah. Jay-Z at all, but
is yeah, Pharrell cool?
Pharrell would be on that list. Pharrell would definitely be on that list. Yeah. There's got to be some more like.
We nailed it, guys.
Yeah. Good list. I was trying to think if it was any of like. like other non like black American guys.
I was trying to think of some white folks. I mean, like George Clooney's really cool.
George Clooney's pretty cool. Matthew McConaughey seems like a cool guy.
Different type of cool.
Cool, different type of cool.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt's like, got a cool factor.
Are we thinking, like, what makes somebody cool? Is it like the universal ability to like just fit in anywhere?
Yeah, I think they have to have a certain essence. Cool? Like even like a Travis Barker is very cool. Like,
like Travis Barker's a good one.
Yeah. Like very loved everywhere. Like, you know,
well,
like grandmas love him. You know what I'm saying? And the young people love him. Like that type of vibe.
Speaking of uncool, Jerry West is still very pissed.
Wait, the real Jerry West or the Jerry West
real,
in the show?
The real Jerry West. He is not on the cool list. Cause right now he says that he'll take this winning time anger all the way to the Supreme Court.
Are we gonna get a season two?
We got better things to do with our tax dollars, Jerry West. To litigate your goddamn grievance, your public image. It's a dramatic character, sir. Let it go.
Dramatization, interpolation.
He said they belittled something good. If I have to, I will take this all the way to Supreme Court. He's pissed. He is not cool about this at all.
Damn, Jerry.
And my main point on this remains, if he watched it, he hasn't watched more than the first episode.
Right.
Or the sex scene in the second episode. And then he's like, fuck this.
But you know what the crazy part of it is? I think that's getting to them. Part of the beauty of this show and what I love about it so much is, as somebody who like watches all this shit, like most things that are based on sports suck. Like they're not good. They're just not. And most of them aren't based on real people. Most of them are based on a false story. And the ones that are have one real person that's the main, you know, star of the movie, that, you know, Jackie Robinson or whatever, you know, four characters, and then everything else is
great.
Right. And then the rest of it is just like lines people make up or things people make up around their story. Right.
Right.
And then, like, most of it, even in 42, is, like, kind of self-serious, you know? That's the other thing is, like, most sports things that are dealing with real people are not handled with any type of comedic or dramatic element. It's all trying to be very serious and hold this kind of esteem about these people as if they're God, you know? It's kind of like Muhammad Ali and all that type of stuff, right? So I get it, because this is kind of a departure from all of that. This is a comedic dramatization of real events that are athletic and, you know, involving sports. So usually if you have something like this, it's like above the rim or some shit, or blue chips or something.
So how do you guys rank Winning Time when it comes to like sports movies or anything like related to?
I mean,
man, I didn't know this was going to be the rankings podcast. What's up? Yeah. I had some time to prep. In terms of the actual basketball, which they've been going away from even more, it feels like lately.
Yeah,
I would say that it's not in like my top five or anything like that. I would say overall, in terms of just like a product, it's pretty damn good. And I'm just like, the only real questions I have are like, how are they gonna jump from the All-Star break to the end of the year in two episodes?
And well, they jumped 40 games in the last.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, are we gonna open up next week's episode? It's like, it's the playoffs. It's like, what?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Why?
Well, that's exactly what they're
gonna
do.
Let's crunch through the whole playoffs real quick. But yeah, I'm not really, you know, I don't feel great about ranking things before they're done. But I would say what I've seen so far, this is definitely like a top five, top 10 potential sports piece of media in the culture.
Okay.
Definitely. Of fictional, you know?
Fictional, yeah. Not a documentary, not The Last Dance.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Because, yeah, I mean, honestly, I have this Best of Michael Jordan DVD that I bought when I was like 13 years old. This has got six games of his. If that were in the running, that would be number one. So right. It's kind of tough to beat. That's nostalgia for you.
Right. And that's another thing about it is that it's tough to beat the actual events themselves. Like if you see them, you know, The Last Dance or, you know, Magic's doing his They Call Me Magic thing. And, you know, right. Maybe we'll get into that once that's done. But, yeah, I understand as a person how it would be for Jerry West to experience this and not be able to divorce yourself from the situation. He's going about it the wrong way, but I do empathize with his place.
B, what about you?
I'm really, really enjoying it because I'm learning a lot about what happened in this season. Seeing these real events kind of weaved in and out, I'm really enjoying this. It's up there for me.
I love all the moments in which Paul says he has to go pee during the episode. He says, I have to use the John. Then he says, I have to hit the head. Then finally he says, I got to piss. And then he yells at Pat, just let me fucking pee in peace before he eventually pisses blood and passes a stone.
Kidney stone.
Ugh. Ugh. But yeah. But as far as, you know, this was a pretty heavy episode when it came to Dr. Buss and his situation with his mom, who pretty much broke out of the hospital. She was right. able to get out and because, you know, she didn't want to die in the hospital. She wanted to, you know, go on her own terms, but hide her true condition from her son. I like the conversation that Mama Buss had with Jeannie. Mm-hmm. Where she said, you know, that's what it is to love a man, that men are weak and they're feeble and they need a show. And
leftover men.
Yeah.
Leftover men. Yeah, she said, I refuse to kick the bucket under the fluorescent lights, going out like Cleopatra with a great wig and a stiff drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so,
yeah, I do lines. Think it is interesting. I mean, I get the arc that they've done, you know, Sally Field doing a great job. It is interesting that. Jerry Buss hasn't done anything basketball related or anything money related in like two episodes. It's been all locked in on this family shit. And like, I get that. That's like a show construction thing, right?
Yeah.
But like, he's got a fucking coaching power struggle happening and he's doing absolutely nothing about it. It seems like he's not even engaged with the team. It's like, and it's not even like he's partying or anything, you know, like he's just at the Forum Club chilling. It's like,
he's engaged with someone. Assumed.
As, oh, God damn.
And that, yes.
Yeah,
and Jeannie calls him out for it, and he still taps.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
God. Have he's you that no grief. Shame.
No, he's shameless. He used he's that shameless. Good old grief.
Which is on Showtime, not HBO.
Crying those crocodile tears into some nice titties.
Yeah. I was like, damn, girl, it's hot.
Hey, California dreaming, y'all. Yeah. No, that was a great moment when he's sitting there unbuttoning her shirt as he's like sort of half sobbing. That was a great little acting moment by John C. Reilly there.
So let me ask you two. So the how to use Spencer Haywood debate, right? So we've got Pat who has the scars literally on his knee and can relate to this guy, and he wants to get him some rest because they know they're going to need him for the playoffs, and he's talking to a man-to-man, and then Jack McKinney comes back into the picture, and he's like, "Nah, we got to get this dude shots. He's got to be putting up numbers. Like, we need to wear him down. Like, we need to get him running." And then it's Jason Siegel, right? It's Paul Westhead who wants to trade him. Or is that also Pat? I can't remember.
No, right. Pat wanted to. So Pat's whole scheme, and this is kind of showing the ruthlessness of Pat Riley, right? And that's kind of the character arc that they're starting to build with him, is showing that even though he's in a fragile position right now, being kind of shooed away by Jack, he's got all of these Machiavellian inclinations to reconstruct the team in his own image and, you know, make all these moves.
He wants to make the trade, but it doesn't fit the system. That's the
Paul doesn't really have any agency in anything right now, right? Mm-hmm. He's kind of being torn between two fathers, it seems like. Yeah.
There's that great moment where it's like where Jack is telling him exactly what to do. You're going to go to Pat and you're going to fire him and you're going to get him out there. And then he goes and talks to Pat. You're going to go to Jack and you're going to tell him that we need each other and you're going to put me on the team.
Yep. Yeah. So
stone from all the stress.
So part of what they're trying to show with Pat Riley, I feel like, is his a little bit of his sliminess, if you will, because he's trying to falsely empathize with Haywood by showing him his own injury and saying, hey, yeah, I just used to tell the coach the same thing. I'll be all right. Maybe you get it checked out, man. Now we really need you. You know, this team isn't going to make it without you. Meanwhile, he's saying, yeah, nah, fuck him. We're going to trade him for Bob McAdoo. You know, Bob's an all-star. People don't know that Spencer's that hurt yet. We'll get him to pass a physical. And, you know, like, we're going to upgrade this team. And Jack is like, looking at him like, yo, what the fuck? when did I die and you get put in charge, basically?
Right.
And he's like, 2 months ago, motherfucker.
Also, some good foreshadowing because Bob McAdoo will be on his way.
Yeah. He does end up on the Lakers. He didn't get traded for Spencer Haywood. Obviously, we also see Spencer Haywood smoking that rock.
Woo! This episode.
Yep.
Crack rock.
Yep. Which is wild. Like, he sweat. Like, what is it about, like, showing men doing crack and they're just, like, in a just sweat.
Flop sweat. Fuck.
What is it? Like, you have to have it.
What? Women aren't sweaty when they smoke crack? What are you talking about?
Like, what is it? Was Halle Berry sweaty when she was doing it?
She was a little sweaty.
I don't know. Let's ask her. Halle?
Right. I was just thinking the whole time, man, what a terrible trajectory for my man Ace Boogie to see him going from, you know, that to Avon Barksdale. He was in jail and now look at him now. He's on the rock. You know, it's just a sad trajectory for my man's, you know.
Yeah.
No, but it was grinded down, you know, like that knee is not going to last.
No, it's not.
The battering it's been taken so far.
No.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, but it was great. But Wood Harris gave us some great scenes in this episode. You know, that scene in the locker room with Pat, but also the great scene between them in front of his house was dope because it's like he basically broke down the whole slavery shit, all Pat's bullshit. Yeah, he said, you're just checking my teeth for the auction block. And he said, you come here, you drink my beer, you smile at my baby. Get the fuck out of my house. Like, he caught him on his bullshit. And Pat's like, where did you hear that? Yeah. He's like, don't give a fuck where I heard that shit. You said it, right? Like, that's what you want to do? So, Pat's full of shit too, man.
But, yeah, I mean, I believe that this power struggle went down something like this. But it is confusing, right? Like, we just don't know enough about what's going on with Jack. Right, like we're getting like peaks at it, but I if it were me, I think I'm siding with the Jason Siegel where he's like with the Paul Westhead where he says let us finish the year, right?
Yeah,
right.
Like you don't want, like we already saw what happened when they had to take over for him and how there was the setback, so like it makes sense. But then I totally understand Jack treating that like a huge betrayal. And being like, well, you're just going to use my team to vault yourself. Because he's been the assistant for however long up in Portland, right? And probably all over the league. So very compelling situation on both sides. But, yeah.
But that was a really crazy scene at the hospital when Paul is, you know, recovering. And Coach Jack comes in and just kills him with his words. He's just like... He said, you're not capable of more. Yeah. And I know that had to make him feel like, oh, you motherfucker, let me show you. But at the same time, you know.
I mean, did it, though? Because it seemed like he kind of wilted, B.
Yeah. I mean, he still feels some sort of loyalty, even though, you know, Jack is like, you stabbed me in the back. You're disloyal. I hired you, you know, because I thought you would understand. And, No.
No, I hired you because I knew you ain't shit.
Pretty
yeah,
much.
Basically.
Yeah, like he talks so
yeah,
much
he
shit
said,
to
be,
him.
He that said, I picked you because you're not capable of more. You fucking Dylan time. Like, Dylan what? Time. Yeah, that like he was really on some shit, you know? So if I'm
in that hospital bed for too
yeah,
long, you know?
If I'm Paul, I'm off this nigga. You know what I'm saying? And I'm riding right with Pat. And I mean, Pat gave him all of the keys, you know, and that was part of the conversation with Pat's wife. She was telling him, you know, the basically Pat was saying Paul and Jack are like family, and she said sometimes those chains become shackles or those bonds become shackles, and you need to give him the key basically to unlock those shackles. And he Ooh. Does outside the house when he tells him, like, yo, this is our fucking team. They look at us, you, like you're the coach. We won the 50 games. He said, we're the best. Like that moment where he's like, we're the best in the league, dude. Like,
in
not him.
League.
Like us. And it was like, what else can you tell somebody? Like, and then when, after that, he still didn't get it, right? And then they were in the locker room and he was like, guys fucking wish their whole lives that they could get in this position. When he's telling him to, like, try to convince Jack to let them coach the rest of the year. And he's like, let us finish the year. We'll go somewhere else, whatever, you know. And but Jack knows, like, if y'all do that shit, I'm out of a job.
I'm out. Like,
they're going to keep you and I'm done.
Yep.
So he's fighting for his life right now. But it's might be a little too late.
Mm. Speaking of too late. Somebody missed their period.
Oh, man. What a transition.
Speaking of fighting for their life, a little Irvin Jr.
Man.
Yo, Rhonda. Oh, Rhonda.
My biggest question coming out of that, because, I mean, let's quick recap. Mm-hmm. Magic banged Rhonda last episode. Now she's pregnant. Just when it starts to seem like it's going well with Cookie. It's not. But why is Cookie like, she's my friend?
Right.
Clearly she's not your
not
fucking
your
friend.
She's not your friend, girl.
She's not your friend. That's not a friend.
No.
And she's, and like we, you know, we as the impartial observers knew this from the beginning when she's
right.
saying all that shady stuff a couple episodes back. Like, oh, yeah. I'm the one that introduced you and blah, blah, blah. I'll go to the game if you won't. But Cookie, come on. Get a new friend.
Yeah, yeah, her speaking about Rhonda in the present tense was like, girl, are you okay? Like, no, she's not. You're not friends. She was, quote unquote, your friend. Now she's having your man's baby. Like, nah. Mm. And now you're going to have to see her around town and on campus with your soulmate's child inside of Ooh. Oh,
yeah.
Heartbreaking.
You better than me, Cookie.
So I liked the whole dynamic where we have Cookie and Magic, how she's in town and she has the whole job offer in Detroit, but she also has an opportunity to come to LA. And he was just not excited. She was like, well, Detroit it is. And he's just like, no, like, I want you here. No, Magic, no, just stop.
Come on, Magic. Yeah, right.
And even after saying all of this and trying to, you know, make Cookie feel better in that moment, 5 seconds later, he just introduces her as Cookie. Like, not my girlfriend. It's just Cookie. Like,
this,
come on,
this
dog.
Cookie.
Come on. This Cookie. Yeah. She's like Aretha Kelly.
Yeah.
Magic not too sharp on his toes in these social situations. You know? Like,
no.
He's dynamic on the court. And he's got vision a couple steps ahead, but nah. Not smooth.
Not at all.
Conversations.
Elsewhere. Yeah, no. But that's not, he doesn't need to be. And that's really the catch of it all, you know, is that as long as he does what he needs to do on the court, everything else will fall into place. And everybody else will be in the orbit where they need to be. What'd you guys think about the cold open with the mile?
This is the second week in a row that we've done these little cold open lectures, and I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I mean, it's like, all right, cool. Let's get to the meat and potatoes.
What did that really have to do with the episode? Because I was like,
Nothing.
I didn't get. Yeah. I was like, how did that directly correlate to what y'all just showed me?
It's a giant history lesson about how if no one thought you could do it and then you did it, then, you know, like, you defied expectations and, like, that challenges people to achieve. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, like, I guess that's another theme of the show. But, like, I mean, on, like, the one last week with the Monopoly, like, at the very least, they played Monopoly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
We didn't have anybody running any goddamn 3-minute miles during the episode. So it was just like, ooh, look, we can freeze time and have Dr. Buss walk through the whole arena as Michael Cooper dunks this alley-oop.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't feeling it. I was waiting for the correlation to happen, and it didn't.
Yeah, it was so kind of like...
Jason, are you still saying every episode has been better than the last, or do you have a favorite episode of the ones we've done so far?
I think the last one was better than this one, but I liked the end of this episode. I loved the emotions that I felt at the end of this episode with the music. Anytime they play like a slower version of like a classic song, it's always going to work on me. They do that a lot nowadays, like they did in the Batman and what have you. And yeah, like, kind of getting to the core of what makes these people special. And I think this episode did that in terms of Magic, you know, in terms of Pat Riley, showing how they became the winners they are and the different aspects of their personalities. You know, Pat is not like Magic. Magic is not like Pat, but they both want to win by any means. And, you know, that is all of their pursuits in life are to that end, you know? And that's kind of what we see. And that's what I really enjoyed about this episode. What
do you guys think about our Larry Bird appearances in this show, in this episode? His dynamic with the commissioners.
Yeah, right. I mean, I was actually going to bring that up. I really thought the guy who's playing Larry O'Brien, who is, you know, David Stern is like the name we know because he becomes a commissioner, but his current boss, the actual commissioner, is this poofy white-haired dude named Larry O'Brien who's always like, hey, how's it going? Yes, have a drink and talk about Larry Bird. Like, he's always turned up. He has no idea, apparently, like, what happens in basketball. It doesn't seem like he gives a shit at all. He's just there to, like, hang out. And so he's kind of like a Jerry Buss, like, older version, right? Like, that's the type of owner that we're used to. So I enjoyed that. I think they've done a good job of turning Larry Bird into, like, the pretty silent villain. Yeah, you know?
I love the music every time he enters the scene. I love it.
Yeah, I think they do a good job of portraying him as kind of like this boring character, like, doesn't really talk a lot, you know, isn't interested in the media or, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies. Yeah, and he just wants a bud. So yeah, I think they do a pretty decent job with Larry. Yeah, I like the David Stern Darth Vader conversation that they had. That was a dope scene because that was very much a part of the misconception and the kind of changing of the tide of even black athletes in America, and the way that they were viewed was Magic bringing a smile and the force that he had to that side of what people thought of black people. And only then could we get Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods or, you know, other people like that, where it wasn't just like, oh, this big brute of a guy, we love Muhammad Ali, he knocks people out, like, but he's super serious, you know. Like, Magic changed the culture of how I think the world in a larger sense, like, viewed black men and black people
And when he came in from that dinner, he was just so excited, like, just talking about how he just ran that dinner and made, you know, everyone feel so comfortable because he was this vibrant, smiley guy. They just love him, and they are going to kind of cater to him in a way because he is this person that, and they see a future in what he has to offer because he's so different and so smiley and so happy that they can put the league on his back and everyone's going to love him. And, you know, he's just going to be this superstar. And then, you know, that's when he runs into the news about Rhonda.
Oh, yeah. No, he had a line, actually, that was that I thought, you know, perfectly encapsulated who he is and who he represented. He said, only thing they like more than one of their own is one of us that make them feel comfortable.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I was like, that was a little genius piece of writing right there, guys. Good job.
Yeah. Yep. And then we got that Milton Berle joke. That was apparently a real Milton Berle joke.
Man, I don't know.
All-Star weekend, folks.
Jesus. Wasn't Milton Berle the dude with the cigars? No.
The dude with the cigars. What do you mean?
No. Who am I thinking of? Who was this short white comedian, old white comedian? But he did. He is pictured here smoking a cigar. Sorry. I was just thinking, is it George something? See, now I'm just derailing the podcast. I'll come back with that. I'll come back
How dare you, Jason?
I'll come back with the real answer.
All right. Next episode. So here you go. Here you go. Six comedians known for their trademark cigars. You ready for this? Groucho Marx, Ernie Kovacs, Alan King, George Burns.
It's George Burns.
That's Ron White and Milton Berle.
Yeah, Milton Berle did have cigars, but I was thinking of George Burns because he has that very unique, like, signature look with the glasses and stuff.
But yeah, fuck Milton Berle. Fuck Milton Berle. Only two episodes left. Only two more episodes to show us a black dick on HBO, because this is the podcast for penis equality. Don't you think I forgot about that? 1 second. And that is going to do it for us this week on Showtime, the podcast about the TV show Winning Time, based on the book Showtime, which airs every Sunday on HBO. Not Showtime. For Jason Madison, Bethany Anderson, I'm Anthony Mays, and we'll see you next week.
Peace.